Hi there, Dojo Disciples. Sean Orange here with a quick word before the podcast starts. We're into the first week of our online survey, and we are here to announce the first winner of our random drawing. So congratulations to Bjorn. We've sent you an email requesting your contact information so that we can send you your shiny new Famicom Dojo Season 1 DVD. Bjorn didn't leave us any additional comments in his survey, but if you leave some and we choose you for our drawing, we will be happy to read them on the show. So just keep it tasteful, kids. For those of you who aren't sure what I'm talking about, we are currently running a survey at famicomdojo.tv/survey, where we ask you questions about what you would like in your ideal video game store. Now, I can't tell you just yet why we're running such a survey, but, you know, feel free to speculate amongst yourselves. If you didn't hear your name but submitted your survey before the release of this podcast, fear not. There's still a chance that you might win. So stay tuned in next week and for the rest of the month at the very least to see if you won. And now, without further ado, the rest of the podcast. So, Vink.
Yeah.
I've been keeping an eye on the news lately, and this is a little bit of old news by this point. But it seems, you know, barring some kind of horrible catastrophe, that the 3DS is going to outpace the first year of the DS's sales by the end of this year.
I think I've heard this statistic somewhere before.
Where?
It's from you.
It's been about a week.
Just a little bit ago, yes.
Yeah. It was last week's show. We brought this up in reference to our touchpads, episode, and it reminded us of something actually that they were talking about during Tokyo Game Show. It was part of the keynote, in specific. But I mean, you know, really, there was like this perennial cry that Nintendo leave the hardware industry and just focus on games. When the 3DS wasn't doing this hot, and then they cut the price, and it's like, oh, time will tell if the 3DS is going to be a moneymaker. And I remember like reading like one particularly a scathing review or opinion piece, I guess, that said that you know, even Nintendo wouldn't give the 3DS until the holidays to make its mark, which I feel is a little unfair in retrospect now, especially given the statistic. But the other thing that you mentioned was an article that showed that the iOS and Android market is now over 50% of the portable game revenue.
Yeah, I wonder how that actually breaks down, because they combine iOS and Android as one statistic, but they don't combine like Nintendo and Sony. But I guess it's what it's saying is, this is how much mobile games. Probably iOS has the advantage because iOS sells to iPads and iPods and iPhones, whereas Android's still mostly on phones. But it's crazy. Okay, I'm going to give you the actual statistic now.
Okay.
It's 58%.
58%.
Now, this is U.S. This is only the U.S.
Sure.
I would love to see something like this for the world market, but this is from NPD Market Research, compiled by Flurry, which is an analytics firm. And so U.S. portable game software by revenue, and I think that's a big one there, revenue.
Mm.
Because when I first saw this, I thought, well, it's like by number of units sold, it's maybe not so scary.
Mm.
Because what the, you know, I think the average price of an iOS game is about $2.
That sounds reasonable.
You know, because there's tons of 99-cent ones, but then you get something like a Final Fantasy, or Final Fantasy III is like $15. That makes it even a little more surprising, because, like, what's a 3DS game sell for these days, or what's a DS game sell for?
3DS, I think, is $35 or $40, maybe more like $40. I actually haven't bought one myself, so I wouldn't know.
So, I mean, that's quite a bit.
You know, on the other hand, though, the system only costs $170 now, whereas like an iPhone or like even like an iPad or an iPhone or sorry iPod yeah. Touch. You yeah. pay hundreds of dollars for it right away. Granted, it can do more. It's not like a dedicated device. But like, you know, even if you have an iPhone and you get it with a contract, you're paying like, you know, $80 a month for it or so to get all the bells and whistles. And that's, you know, for an indefinite amount of time as long as you own the device. Whereas, you know, you can own a 3DS indefinitely without paying anything extra except for the premium on the games. So I guess it'd be interesting to see some like numbers on like over, say, 5 years, how much money you spend on gaming on one device versus the other.
Well, I've been an iOS user for almost 2 years now.
Okay.
And I've probably spent about $150, maybe 200, something like that.
Never mind. But, well, it's like five games.
but that's the thing. I think that's what's weird about it. Like, that sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because that represents the purchase of probably over 100 games.
Sure, sure.
But on a dedicated hardware device, that would represent the investment in like five games.
Well, here's the other question too: is there a quality issue as well? Like how often or how long would you play an iPhone game that you downloaded versus the $40 experience?
Yeah, only some. But I think it's just because, as I said, I have too many games now.
Yeah.
Like, some of the ones that I've played more than any others were ones that I got for 99 cents.
Wow.
Like, whereas some of the ones that I paid a little bit more for, like Chaos Rings, I didn't get as much value out of.
Right.
But, okay. Did you ever play Scribblenauts?
Yeah, yeah. DS? Yep. That was a pretty fun game before I lost my DS. Yeah. I downloaded it on my iPhone, though. I think that's where you're going with this.
Yeah, that is where I'm going for.
Haven't tried it yet.
It's really quite good. The on-screen keyboard really helps, especially when you play it on an iPad and you can type like typing.
Yeah.
It's not as many levels as the DS game.
Well, that's
too bad. The graphics are better. It took levels from Scribblenauts and Super Scribblenauts. There's a total of like 50 levels.
Okay.
It's not quite as long as either of the two on on the DS, but I paid a dollar for it.
Yeah, that's the
thing.
And
it's normal. It was on sale. Its normal price is only $5. And in that way, it is a much better deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I can kind of see how these charts are going.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, so for, like, I think I'm on the high end of people buying iPhone games.
Mm-hmm.
I would say.
Sure, I think so.
As you said, my Game Center profile, which maybe I should even link to this podcast. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I will. Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
But maybe we'll see how I feel by the end of this. But if anybody really needs to see how badly I suck at games, they could just see my high scores or low scores, as it were. Oh, I am number one rated in the world right now for bouncing.
How many active players are on that game, though?
That's like 200 or something.
Jeez.
Oh, but their score is actually it's a different type. It's for lowest score is the only one they keep track of for Game Center. And
sure.
My second time playing it, I set the lowest possible score that anyone in the world has ever done on the game. And I can't even match it again. I cannot right. even force myself to suck that bad again. So it stands right now. So if anybody thinks they suck worse than me, for 99 cents you can put your money where your mouth is.
Bring it.
Yeah. Bring it.
But I mean this is interesting though. So like, you know, we started talking about Scribblenauts by me admitting that I downloaded it but haven't played it yet. Now, if you buy a DS game or like a console game or anything like that, you don't buy it until you're ready to play it, typically. I mean, there's been instances where that hasn't been true.
I'm just looking at Mario Partners in Time still in its original shrink wrap looking at me. But yeah, for the most part, yeah.
You know, unless like the game was like on sale, for like $10 or something like that. You know, like a impulse buy price, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At like a dollar, you know, anything that's on an iPhone for a dollar, it's like that's definitely impulse buy range. It's like I'll play this eventually, and then maybe you will, maybe you won't. You seem to admit basically that like a lot of the games that you bought were just because they were cheap, and you might not have even opened them yet.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very true. Okay. Here's an example. DS to iPhone. Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars. It was a $40 DS, $35, whatever you'd get it for, because it was a larger cartridge size, so it was a bit pricey. And I picked it up for the iPhone when it hit $3.
Right.
It's normally like 10, but when it hit $3, like I'm not that interested in the Grand Theft Auto series, really. It's not really my thing. But like when it hit that price, I bought it, and I haven't. Right. I played it a little bit. It looks really good, actually. It looks really fun. But I just don't have the time to invest in a game like that. But yeah, that's the thing. I have tons and tons of games, but some of them I barely scratched the surface. I've barely played past the tutorial. I'm a great deal of these games.
Right, right.
And I'll continue buying new ones as like, I don't know what my thought process is here. Like, okay, perhaps I'll have to go live on the moon where there's no Wi-Fi. And I'm going to need 10 years worth of games to play on my phone. You know, there's no scenario where
right.
where it makes sense that I keep getting these apps.
Well,
but,
well, think of it this way, yeah. Right? Like, not only are these games so cheap that they're like in impulse buy range, they're like in rental range. You know, it's
very
like,
true. Very
yeah.
true.
You know, there's something that's like, I might want to try this, I might not. It's only a dollar now. It's on sale for only a dollar right now. I better buy it. And yet it's being compared as like an apples-to-apples thing to like a $40 3DS game or like a $35, $30 DS game where, you know, you go out to intend to buy it and play it. And so, you know, you can borrow someone's iPhone, right, to play someone else's copy of something. But, yeah. You know, when it's so cheap like that, you might as well just get it for yourself. And if you don't like it, then you know, just take it off your list or whatever. But your account still keeps track of it. It's still compiled in the stats.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when they look at, like, the overall volume of, like, games downloaded, that's taken into consideration. But I think the amount of money that these things bring in is just as important to compare as well as the motivations for why people actually buy these things. And I think
Definitely.
At this point, if you still look at those numbers, that I want to believe anyway that the handhelds are taking in more money overall. On the other hand, I'm sure the development costs for those games are much higher than for the iPhone stuff.
Well, it all depends. Like, I'd say a good 95% of the games on the iPhone are just crapware.
Sure.
I mean, they're just converted Flash games or things like that. But those games don't actually often do all that well. You know, a lot of developers complain about not making any money, but the developers who are actually investing money, like Chair, who did Infinity Blade, or, you know, Disney's had a lot of success, Gameloft's had a lot of success, EA's had a lot of success. You know, the companies who are willing to make an investment in doing these things – people making games with the Unreal Engine and stuff like that.
Wow, yeah, right.
They're getting that money back. And I think we're going to see a lot of developers adding that to the games they, you know, to the platforms that they support.
Yeah.
Because okay, we talked a little bit about this in our Tokyo Game Show podcast, but Gameloft.
Yeah.
You played for last week's podcast. You talked about playing Nova, and you know, I was asking about that in relation to the controls. But
as it looked as a game, what did you think?
Oh, yeah. I would probably put it on par with, like, you know, the Xbox, PS2, GameCube generation, graphically. You know, the enemy AI wasn't great. Like, they... I played the demo, right? So I saw, like, all two enemies, like, on a beach.
Yeah.
They both, like, stood on top of a rock and just, like, pointed their guns at you, like, both arms extended, and they wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah.
You know? So there's probably not, like, a lot of, like, processing or memory, like, diverted to that, but it looked gorgeous. Like, the opening cinema was all game engine, I think, anyway.
Yep.
And it looked fantastic. You know, very, very Halo-y, as I mentioned last time. But, yeah, there's like not a lot that it can't do. You know, it's just up to the effort of the designer and the developers, and that I'm sure is in direct proportion to how much money they think they're going to make on it.
Well, exactly. And now this is gonna sound weird because it's kind of an anti-consumer statement to make, but you know, I do care about game companies.
Sure.
I really hope the average price of iPhone games goes up.
Oh, interesting.
I know that sounds horrible. And I'm still probably going to wait for the sales to buy things. But, like, Infinity Blade came out at, like, $6. And a lot of people were like, whoa, that's really expensive. You know, now, that's a premium priced app.
Sure.
That's crazy. Because, like, if you saw Infinity Blade for the 3DS on a cartridge for $6, you'd buy that. You'd buy a couple copies, you know?
Right, right.
That's the value of games. I bought lots of $15 games on WiiWare, but I wouldn't even consider it on the iPhone. Like, I've never bought a game more than $10 on the iPhone. And even that $10 game, I still feel kind of weird.
Well, it's just the ecosystem, right? Like, if
it is,
everything else is, you know, that cheap, it sort of sets your expectations. It's only been lately that, like, I feel like that there's actual quality coming out of these shops, you know, even Game Loft, you know. Whereas I see, you know, 3 years ago, I'm thinking, where, like, any ridiculous app for like $1, you know, someone would just download because it was stupid and dumb, and they'd like just play with it for 5 minutes just to show people.
Fart warrior, he's got a sword and he farts.
Oh, jeez, yeah, it's like you know, just it's like the novelty factor, which is just isn't an issue with you know, DS games. It's like they're out to give you X number of hours of play, hopefully replay on top of that, and there's probably story involved, and there's just a lot more art and creativity, I think, that is packed into that package. But the price differential is still a huge issue, and I honestly don't see iOS gaming really going up in price unless there's just some kind of killer app that is so good, blows everything else out of the water, that that it would encourage people to realize they could make a little bit more money on it. But I can't think of what that could be, especially when you have, you know, games like what Game Loft can make, and
sell for $6. Yeah,
yeah, it's difficult. So, all right, I want to briefly mention what they said at TGS exactly, because we were there. We're not allowed to use more than a few minutes or seconds of footage from that actual keynote. And we were thinking of a way to actually, like, work this into a video or a podcast or something. But I guess, you know, now is as good a time as any, right?
Yeah, I think so.
To summarize the position of the president of the CESA, was it?
Yes, the Computer Entertainment Software Association.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. His whole thing was that there's always, like, a dimension of innovation to go to. So, like, Nintendo did a lot of that with its handheld systems. And what's happened now is that you have a machine like the iPhone or the iPad, iOS in general, that can emulate a lot of those functions. And so it's less about the dedicated machine doing a very specific kind of thing, and more about a general, like, a war between general purpose machines that everyone wants to get their hands on. So it's less about the games and more about the platforms, I guess. And once you can make a really good platform that locks people in, then you make a lot of your money that way. Don't develop the games yourself, and then everyone else should be a developer, like, which is another argument for Nintendo, you know, quitting the hardware business and just making games that way. However, the caveat he added to that, hopefully not to like upset his industry guests.
I really, it sounded kind of tacked on at the end, but go ahead.
But if there's that new dimension of innovation you can come up with, because he mentioned three of them, and there was a fourth like question mark out there. That these dedicated devices can go out to. That is where you're going to find your market. If it can do the exact same things that an iPhone can do, then yeah, you're screwed. But if like the 3DS has that 3D capability with like glasses, that's like their gimmick to have a reason to have a proprietary machine.
And Vita has the rear touchscreen. It has the gosh, what does Vita have? Uncharted.
Higher price points. Doesn't have Monster Hunter anymore.
It'll get Monster Hunter. I totally, unless Nintendo like built a second money bin and labeled it for Capcom only, you know. It'll come to different things. But yeah, I have it on my iPhone. I have Monster Hunter.
Right.
But it's kind of a $3 Monster Hunter.
I think too, like the sort of implied direction that would go is that it might be only a matter of time before these dedicated machines have a feature that can be incorporated into the larger platform, like an iPhone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it depends on whether or not like Apple thinks it's a good feature, but you might see that technology like in the iPhone 10 or something down the road.
Maybe. That's the thing. If it can be used for things other than gaming, then probably it'll go into a multi-purpose device. But the thing about multi-purpose devices, at least the successful ones, are the ones that aren't a Swiss Army knife, you know?
Yeah.
But are sleek and well-designed. And I think that's why the original iPod did so well, because it was just like, we're a music player.
Mm.
But all these others were like, oh, we can play videos on this and games and movies, and it's got a camera and it's got an FM radio and it's got a recorder. And what does the iPhone have? It plays music. And everyone's like, ha, how can a device that only does one thing succeed? But, well, as we know, the Zune totally took over.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor Zune.
Did you read this? There was a post by a Google employee that got put out on Google Plus accidentally, publicly, that sort of maligned the way Google Plus is handled and the way Google does its software in general. Which it dovetails with this conversation, I think, because it's not about gaming per se, but it is about products versus platforms.
Okay.
It's the general gist of it. And, I mean, the main complaint was, like, companies like Amazon, where this guy had worked in the past, Apple, and I guess by extension Nintendo, since it's so Apple-like, Microsoft. Mm. These are all companies that are great at platforms. So we've discussed how, like, the Apple II was, like, you know, meant to be a gaming platform. Like, they made their one game for it at Apple headquarters and then let everyone else loose. The iPhone's kind of the same way. It's like they had that 1 year to like prove what this device could do. And then when people started realizing like the power of what they could do with it, that's when they opened it up to application developers and everything. Okay. So that was another smart platform move. And this guy's particular experience was with Amazon and how they went to like a web services architecture or just services in general, which, you know, extends into web services.
Yeah.
So from like a programming standpoint, that's really smart because you always have to deal with this middle tier to get all your work done. And you're not like doing these like vertical content silos. There's always this mixture going on. So you get the best of everything, but things can get, you know, slow. Design philosophies, blah, blah, blah. Google Plus is being developed as a product. And something that's happened recently is, you know, they didn't have business pages, for instance. And then they added business pages recently, but they're only tied to like one admin account. You can't add multiple admins like Facebook can. And so it's like, rather than organically growing from what the users want to do, which they wanted to make business pages off the bat, but it's like, oh, we're only open to individuals right now. Instead of incorporating those features like Twitter would do, for instance, with the retweets. It just sort of, it's kind of going counter to what the users want to do. So the best thing that happens, this guy says, in the cases of building a good platform, is instead of taking that approach, what you do is you build the platform and you build your killer app for the platform to get other people to fill in the ecosystem. So in the case of Facebook, Facebook's a platform. The picture sharing, friends, tagging is Facebook's killer app, but it's not the only thing that Facebook can do. You know, there's games. Like Zynga's making, you know, millions, billions even dollars a year on the Facebook platform. But they don't use it the way Facebook does. But they use Facebook's application, the friends, to increase their own, basically make use of the social network that already exists. So in the case of the iPhone.
And that's what Gree's doing in Japan too.
Yeah, exactly.
Gree, the company we talked about a lot on our other podcast, started off as a social network like Facebook or MySpace or, you know, one of those other things. And they found that the most popular thing was the gaming. So they but it's still a social network. Yeah.
Right, right. Definitely. So, but yeah, you get something like the iPhone. Its killer app was being a good phone and having, you know, the next generation iPod.
I keep forgetting that you could make calls on it. But
it became a multi-purpose communication device. You know, you had the texting, internet, you know. So it's kind of interesting that, like, it eventually allowed things like Skype and things that circumvent its own killer app, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But it hasn't seemed to hurt the phone companies at all, at least not yet. But that's what you do. And so the more I think about it, the more I realize that that first year where they didn't have any apps must have been deliberate so that they can show just the power of this multi-purpose device and then just sit back and make loads of money, because they've been making mistakes. I mean, they didn't have the best phone out there from my estimation. It couldn't do mass texts. It couldn't do picture mail.
Phone
it's not
calls.
In the US network. It couldn't do phone call.
Sorry, but that's AT&T.
That's AT&T's fault. Yeah. But you know, that's the reason I didn't get an iPhone for a long time, because it wasn't until iOS 4 came out that I felt like it was, you know, all of its amazing features were still amazing and unique, but not enough for me to give up a phone that could do some of those things better still. And once that crossed that threshold, everything else that, you know, other companies are trying to emulate about the good features and unique features of the iPhone, I saw just, you know, pale in comparison to what the iPhone can actually do. But now, now they've done stuff like they split off their iPod into two different apps. There's a music player and a video player now, which is awful for my podcast streams, because some of those feeds, like ours, have both in them. And so if you want to look at both, you have to go to two different applications to use them. Very unintuitive, if you ask me.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right. Now, you've made a lot of points. Can I do a couple counterpoints?
Yeah, go for it.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. One thing I've noticed lately is now, a lot of the early iPhone games were ports from DS. You've got, like, Phoenix Wright got ported, Touch Detective, you know, Prince of Persia, Warrior Within got an iOS port. A lot of stuff like that. But what's happening now is you're seeing it go the other way.
Really?
I guess it's not a port in that way, because these often started out as computer games. But okay, but like, you can get Peggle on the DS.
Sure.
And it is not better than the Peggle game on the iPhone. But it is 20 times as expensive.
Okay.
And you can get Plants vs. Zombies on the DS. And it's not as good as the iOS version.
Right.
And you can get Angry Birds on the DS. Or DSiWare. I'm not sure which one. Probably both. But... The thing is, like, what you were saying was a lot of them were kind of like throwaway experiences.
Sure.
But really, they're selling fairly well at $40.
Yeah.
Or well, they probably don't come out as $40.
Well, those particular like games you mentioned, though, are like exceptions that kind of prove the rule, maybe. I don't know. Those are quality titles that, like, I don't know if I'd if I could play a game like Game Dev Story. Of course, that's for an older app. Like maybe like Cut the Rope could be good on like a DS, but it wouldn't be a good console game probably, unless you could work it on the Wii somehow.
You could do Cut the Rope anyway because it needs multi-touch. But yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh man. Yeah. So that makes you wonder too, because the Wii gets kind of maligned for having like a lot of shovelware on it.
Oh yeah.
And And you know we've mentioned that the iPhone has just as much crap on it, but I think the big distinction is that a lot of the crap on the Wii costs, you know, well into the double digits.
Well into the double digits. The lower double, the
mid to lower double digits.
Mid to lower double digits. Yes. But I know what you mean.
It just occurred to me too that Nintendo kind of runs, you know, their platforms like, you know, the other successful platform makers. They make awesome first party titles like Zelda or the Mario games, Smash Brothers. The print of stuff people can expect, you know, once they make a new system, we're going to have a new version of, you know, Mario Kart 7 is coming out for the 3DS, for instance.
Then they open up the floodgates and let the crap flow in.
Well, that's exactly right. But this is the model, and they must have known this for the last 30 years, for how to make your platform successful.
Oh, definitely.
So that's good for them, but the joke is that only Nintendo makes money off of the Wii. And it could be because the shovelware is so expensive, whereas people seem to be perfectly happy to be paid just $1 for their iPhone games. It's so weird. I can't explain it.
I don't know if they're happy about it, but like the thing is, these new platforms like iOS, like Android, and things like that are just wonderful for indie developers, I think.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Because to get a dev kit or a license for one of these major platforms requires capital, requires, you know, an established company. But like, you know, with like the Angry Birds guys were just a couple guys, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, if they would have pitched their idea to a major studio, it probably wouldn't, but maybe it would have, but like it would have been a risky venture.
Right.
But when you release it at 99 cents, people are willing to take a chance on that thing.
Yep.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because I like big company, big production games. I love indie games too, but I want both. And some of the bigger companies did have trouble on the mobile platforms because they tried to sell the games at fair price. I remember $15 apps and stuff like that, and people went, let's see, $15 for this game. For that price, I can get 15 of these games.
Right.
Like the thing is, like, none of those 15 games are as good as that game, but all of them together seems like a better value. And also, one thing you brought up is how expensive the iPhones are. And yeah, they are. They're hugely expensive. The iPad starts at $500. iPhones higher than that, you know, especially after you're paying. Even you go, no, the iPhone's $99 and with a 2-year contract. Well, you know, you're going to be paying thousands of dollars, you know, for the privilege of using that phone. However, the iPod Touch just dropped down to $200.
Oh, interesting. That's, oh dear.
And during the keynote where that was announced, they pretty much went because of its ability to be sold basically as a gaming platform. It was mentioned in the keynote that Tim Cook delivered as saying that it is the number one mobile gaming platform now. That they're trying to competitively price it so they can move it into that sector. And I'm sure that execs at Nintendo went, oh, please.
Nintendo, how do you think Sony feels? You know, the PS Vita is still $250 as far as I know.
I imagine Sony doesn't, like, the way I see it, that Sony is either, like, passed out drunk after hearing this announcement and not really caring, or, you know, they've got their fingers in their ears trying to ignore it. But no, so actually, Sony's not ignoring it. Sony's trying to get into that pie.
Yeah.
The Xperia is an Android phone.
Right.
You know? They're trying to be like, okay, you can buy Android apps on this phone and PSP games. Oh my gosh. I know it wasn't meant to seem so crappy and horrible, but I was at an electronics store. And they had all these pads out. They had the iPad. They had the Galaxy Tab. Galaxy Tab looks really nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the Sony tablet. I don't remember what the name of it is. But they were demoing software on them. And I think they meant to be like, I mean, they were trying to show, like, hey, this could play original downloaded PlayStation content for PSN from the store, you know, as a major marketing thing. But, like, on the iPad, they had, like, one of the Game Loft titles, like, Let's Golf or something. It's the one that looks like Hot Shots Golf. Like,
sure.
You know, it looks really nice. Really nice-looking piece of software. And on the Galaxy tab, they had something else running. I don't remember what. It also looked very nice. And on the Sony tablet, they had the original Hot Shots Golf being emulated. And it looked horrible. It just looked horrible blown up on that screen. But I mean, there's the thing. Sony wants in. They want part of the smartphone thing. And Nintendo wants to try to make their DSi store more appealing. Or sorry, what's it? 3DS store, I guess now.
Right.
I mean, everybody and like the PSP minis. I mean, everybody's trying to get in on this app bandwagon right now. Because there's a lot of money to be made there, and the Xperia Play, which is the one that's compatible with PSP games released by Sony, is, you know, it's selling itself as gaming smartphone. And the iPod Touch is, like, pretty much, you know, released as a gaming platform. And I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of Android-based game-type devices released as well. Because any company that can make some hardware can get the Android operating system for free. And that's another thing. Apple products are expensive. They're really expensive. But there is an alternative to Apple products. If you want to play Angry Birds, you can play it on any, you know, Android tablets. You can get for under $200 easily.
Yeah.
The new one coming out, well, it just came out right now, is the Kindle Fire. That's a $200 Android tablet.
Right, right.
Should Nintendo be worried?
Yes. I think so. I mean, I'm fluctuating in my opinions about this, because I mean, sure everyone's trying to get in like the app bandwagon now, as you were saying, but you know Nintendo, well, didn't do it first really, but they had, at least at the time when the Wii came out, like one of the most robust digital downloading services for a console with the WiiWare stuff, or sorry, I guess the virtual console, and then into WiiWare, which was more done to emulate like the
really
independent.
Most robust. I mean, because, you know, Xbox 360 had been out a year before that.
Well, I'm more referencing like being able to play the older games, you know?
Oh, I see. Okay, okay.
And then like WiiWare was like their attempt to catch up to what Live was already doing with original content. But yeah, the stuff that Xbox was doing with Live at the time, you know, that first year pales in comparison to what it's doing now. And as someone who owned both a Wii and 360 in 2006, I was buying way, way more things for the virtual console than I was for Live.
Huh.
Yeah.
I, well, I mean, you
you're a diehard Nintendo fan, though.
So. Yeah, but I'm not a Nintendo fanboy anymore. And you know, since like about 2007, fall 2007 onward, my primary console choice has been the 360. And you know, there are a lot of they fostered original games, you know, and to some extent indie games, like with the breakthroughs like Braid, and such. And you know, I really can't say how much money that makes them versus their, you know, typical disc based fare, but it's definitely something that I've been spending more money on as time has gone on, and I've been spending less money on the virtual console because either I have the games in hard format already, or you know, they've slowed their releases as well quite a bit since launch. So I think yeah, these other machines are going to have to virtualize themselves, at least in their own particular niches, like Nintendo has with the virtual console stuff, and or foster new game development, because even if it does cost $10 for like an Xbox Live Arcade game, I'm still willing to pay that. Maybe just because it's like a perceived increase in quality over iOS stuff, or there's an actual increase in quality. I'm not sure, but you know, things like Gameloft are trying to combat those notions, obviously.
Yeah, they're trying very hard. But like, well, you said paying $10, like, you know, that's the price of Piggle on Xbox, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, stuff like that. Is it worth the premium?
Well, I have both versions. I tend not to play it on my iPhone for some reason. I really couldn't tell you why that is. Maybe because I mostly played it because I didn't have an iPhone when it came out, and I was playing on my Xbox a lot, and I don't feel like I have to play it anymore. So I just got it on the iPhone because it was cheap, and I wanted to have it because I liked the game. But I have never really been compelled to play it. But you know, from the standpoint of the developers and the publishers, it doesn't matter. They have the money. So,
is it? I don't know if it's just me being old. I don't know, but I don't want dedicated gaming platforms to die out. I really, really don't. As much as I love being able to get games really cheap,
yeah,
I like game boxes and I like manuals. And I know we talked about this during our DLC one, but the thing is, I have a 3DS right now, and I don't own any games for it. Okay, I mean, I got Four Swords for free, and I played that a little bit. And I'm borrowing Street Fighter 4 from one of my friends right now.
Sure.
And someone else is going to loan me Super Mario Land. But like, if this was 5 years ago, I would have owned several games for this by now.
Mm-hmm.
But like, games in Japan are, if you go by the current exchange rate, are like $55, $56.
Ooh, yikes. Okay.
It's a crazy, crazy amount of money. And games for the iPhone are 85 yen, which is about $1, you know?
Sure.
And some of the games are the same, you know? Like, I have Street Fighter 4 Volt for my iPhone. Now, as we talked about last time on the touchscreen gaming, it's not as easy to play.
I mean, there are fewer buttons. I don't know if it's buttons. As robust as the console version.
It's honestly not, but I just don't think that the console version is 56 times as good. Maybe twice as good. Maybe four times as good. And that's why I have a hard time.
Well, I mean, okay, take Gameloft out of the picture for a second.
Okay.
Companies that develop games like that, like, you know, console-like games, are typically the publishers who are making the console games themselves and are making some kind of variation of that for the iOS platform.
Yes.
So it's safe to say, I think, that their first point of development is for the console, and then whatever they can sort of dumb down, if that's the appropriate term for iOS, is what they'll do. They're not primarily making things for iOS first and foremost, and then trying to create a different expanded experience for the console, at least not yet.
Yeah. There has been a little bit of going the other way.
A little bit.
It's a rarer thing.
I don't know if it's gonna get less rare is the thing. Maybe it's just too early to say, but I don't really see it. I don't know where to go with this. It's like, should Nintendo and other companies be worried? Yes. Will these companies ever go third party and embrace someone else's platform? In Nintendo's case, we've already discussed this over an entire podcast.
Yep.
And now that it occurs to me that their model has a lot to do with showing other companies how great their platform is by making awesome games themselves.
Yep.
That's really, I guess we sort of touched upon that idea in that last podcast. But that's really a big motivator for them to make good games in the first place. Why would they make an awesome game for someone else's platform if that entire design philosophy is taken away from them, or they give it up voluntarily?
I think Nintendo would rather die.
Yes.
No, I mean, there's a pride thing. Unless there's a major shift in management,
mm-hmm.
or a corporate takeover.
But they have so much money. They have so much cash on hand, even if they are going to have a loss for the first time since before the Wii came out. Like, they're sitting on just mountains of cash right now. There's no reason to be bought out.
They're bleeding it now, though.
Well, they're not. They're bleeding a little, but they're not, like, hemorrhaging out the ears and whatever. You know, they can still turn this around, especially if the 3DS is doing as well as it's doing.
The thing is, like, they seem to. To quote Iron Man 2,
what?
And to not even remember the quote correctly, but there was that one like, I made God bleed.
Oh.
You know, like, I mean, Nintendo for a while just seemed like this unstoppable juggernaut. And like
before the '90s or after 2005,
it had two different eras of it. You know? Okay, and I feel the same way about Apple. I don't think Apple will retain its market share either.
Sure,
there's too much competition. Android. Mm. I mean, they're already losing a lot to Android. They're not losing money yet because the market's growing for everyone. There's just money for everyone to grab right now.
Sure.
So Apple's selling more and more. But at the same time, Android smartphones are selling more and more as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's more Android smartphones being sold every year now than Apple devices, than Apple phones. But no one's hurting right now because there's just so much to go around. But eventually that's going to stop.
Right.
And then it's going to get ugly. It's going to get really ugly.
Yeah. So I guess I'm in the wait and see mode right now. I don't think that we can call it one way or the other, but I'm getting the impression just because things are so cheap that the growth potential is what's scary right now, but the lasting staying power versus, you know, like a 30-year industry, obviously making huge waves. Time will tell, I guess. I can't tell right now, that's for sure.
So you think they both can survive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they may have to come down in price eventually. I mean, there's definitely going to be downward pressure on the console and other handheld games to lower their prices. But I don't think that it's going to make them extinct.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair call. For you, you still see no problem in buying a full-priced, shrink-wrapped game.
I have to admit, it is harder. I think I mentioned on numerous occasions that, like, $50 for a Wii game seems like too much sometimes, and yeah, I'll gladly pay $60 for 360 games.
I have a lot of games that look nicer than Wii games on my cell phone, you know? That's no offense. No, that's terrible.
They more fun?
To the Wii. What?
Are they more fun, though?
Oh,
are they better experiences?
I don't think anything so far on my smartphone has equaled an experience to a Wii game that's made by Nintendo.
Oh, that's fair enough.
You know what I mean? Like, but like third part, but like there's already better shooters than any shooter that's come out of a third party on the Nintendo Wii.
Mm.
Both in graphical quality and polish.
Mm-hmm.
Conduit was pretty nice, but there's things better than the Conduit on the smartphones already.
Sure.
You know, music, you know, just lots of stuff. But the smartphones don't have a Mario, and they don't have a Mario Kart, and they don't have... They've tried to make games like Zelda, but so far not
not there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think as long as Nintendo continues pumping out those quality titles and making them that they can only be played on a dedicated hardware,
yeah,
they're going to continue to not to be relevant. But
Zelda's forced me to buy a Wii Motion Plus.
There you go.
That's just a fact.
Are you getting the gold one?
Yeah, it's well, you know, as of the airing of this podcast, I will have probably played it and beaten it. But as of this recording, it hasn't arrived yet.
I see. My brother's waiting. I mean, looking forward to that with rapt anticipation himself. So
yes.
I'm hooked on a 99-cent iPhone game right now.
Boy,
it's called Grand Prix Story. It's by Kariosoft, the people who made Game Dev Story.
Oh, sure.
I have no interest in cars at all. I don't care anything about cars. I don't want to pimp my ride. I currently have a dirt bike that is my primary means of transportation. So I'm not a car guy, and I don't care about Grand Prix races or NASCAR or anything like that, but I'm totally hooked on this game because Kariosoft injects their games with computer code and I think crack. Because I don't care anything about cars, but like I'll find myself playing this for an hour and a half at a stretch.
Sure.
It just has that, like, just one more race. Just one more race. If I can get this wheel upgrade, I am sure that this next race will be. And I'm thinking to myself, and I'm like, you don't care about any of this stuff. Why are you playing?
All right, then. That's fair.
Weird, I don't know, but fair. Yeah, but I think our listeners, I wonder which camp they're going to fall into.
Yeah, same here.
I'm guessing most of them will be more in your camp.
Now, but we'll see how that changes in a year, 2 years. We'll see how this next generation of consoles does. Right, that's really gonna.
That's really gonna do it. If the Wii U doesn't have graphics as good as my iPad,
it will.
Then we've got a problem.
It will. I mean, they already announced the HD, so that's not going to be a problem. If they don't have HDMI, that might be interesting because both the PS3 and Xbox 360 have that now. So,
but I mean, that's a quote that Sony made. That one of the problems Sony sees is like the phone technology. There's a new generation every single year.
Right.
And the gap is closing.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
The iPad 2, like Infinity Blade on that, matches a lot of first generation Xbox 360 games in graphical quality.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not up to what games are going on now, but like, and the Unreal Engine developers were quoted as saying that some of the stuff that they put into the new Unreal Engine is stuff that the current the computers can do, but the current generation consoles can't even do.
but that the
iPhone 4S and iPad 2 with the A5 processor can.
Oh,
and of course, I'm familiar with iOS devices, but that's not to leave out Android devices, which in many cases have even stronger processors than these. So by the time the next Nintendo system comes out, will it be obsolete before it comes out?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, hopefully they're paying attention.
And that's what we're going to wait and see. All right. Wow, that was pretty serious discussion, actually.
I know.
I didn't see it going that way, but that was really good. So let's end with something fun.
Yeah, fun things are always fun.
I don't know. I think our discussion was fun too, though. But
yeah,
this is fun. This is a letter that came into us. This is from Satoshi Matrix, who frequents Famicom World.
Yes. .com for those who
want
to go there themselves.
Go there. Very good place. And he said, "Hey, Vink, in episode 26 of your podcast, what was episode 26?
That was two episodes ago. Yeah, the music. Yep.
Music. Yeah." You had mentioned the amazing opera scene in Final Fantasy VI, which I referred to as Final Fantasy III, and commented about how it did lyrics without actual vocals. I don't know if you were aware or not, but a few years ago, an actual opera company produced a full 21-minute English suite of the aria di mezzo. Oh, I'm going to slaughter this. Caratere, I don't know. in its entirety. The Celis, oh, sorry, scene in specific, have been cut and edited to suit the Super Nintendo footage. Check this out. I'm sure you'll love it. And he gives me a link to a YouTube video that we will put in our liner notes.
Yes.
Liner notes. Is that what I'm calling
show
it
notes.
Show notes. Liner. Ooh, liner notes is, that's nice. You that's can old, find man. Them in the that's inner sleeve of our podcast. Oh, I'm old.
Weren't you just lamenting the lack of such things in downloadable content like our podcast?
Yes, yes.
At least we have really, album art.
We really need to release our podcast on vinyl.
Oh,
I think that would.
Yeah, because we'll get the full spectrum of sound as opposed to the 64 kilobits a second that are afforded to us.
I know. I think my ums and ers will sound that much richer.
it'll make much more sense in that context, definitely.
Indeed. Anyway, thanks. That's the type of listener mail. That we love to get because I was not aware of that actually. I mean, it sounded like a good idea, and it didn't surprise me that someone did it. But it was really nice to hear that someone did, and it sounds great.
Oh,
so
yeah.
everyone, if you have any interest at all in that episode 26 that we did or Final Fantasy music in general, you should really check that out.
Definitely. We also for those of you who are just listening on their iPods, don't really visit the website. If you go, or you know, if you already have it in your feed and on your phone and everything, you can listen to it there too. But we link all of our previous shows or you know, ones that are related and mentioned in the podcast in our show notes. So you know, we already have a nice little list there. So you just have to go to the website to find out which ones those are, which you can do on your iOS device, I'm sure, very easily.
So again, and John's been working really hard on upgrading our site. Every time I go there, it looks a little bit different. So
yes,
it's check it out. If you haven't been there for a while, check it out now. You might find that it's a little bit different. And Christmas is coming up.
Yes. Did you bring your coat?
What?
Nothing.
So if you're in a country other than the U.S. or in the U.S. yourself and are looking for some Christmas gifts, this would be a good time to order it. You don't want to wait too long because
it does take a little
bit of time, especially if you're ordering internationally,
mm-hmm.
To get a copy. And we thank you in advance if you're picking those up as stocking stuffers because I'm pretty poor this Christmas, so I think I'm going to be giving copies to all of my relatives.
Yeah, we're making it easy for you guys though, so everyone who uses the promo code NOSHAME can get our season one DVD at a discounted price. So why the heck not?
Oh, so you're extending Christmas this year?
Of course.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So don't be a Grinch. Buy our DVD.
Woohoo!
And with that shameless plug, I think that's all I got for this week, Sean.
Yep, that sounds good to me. So yeah, check out our website, FamicomDojo.tv. Find us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo, YouTube, That's Orange, and of course on iTunes storefront there. And leave some feedback and comments and help give the gift of our wonderful show to your fellow iOS device listeners.
And if you're communicating still through smoke signals, that's blanket at full, blanket at half, no blanket on for a while, blanket at full.
Yeah, I was thinking of getting the semaphore version done too, but I ran out of time.
The semaphore version, okay. Yeah. We really are on everything, so find us where you can, and leave us a note. We love it.
Awesome. Rockin' Betty Gay.